The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the MadTech Podcast. I'm Matt Broughton, research lead at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined by this week's special guest, who is Matt Benathan, Senior Vice President Global Data at ZeroTap. Hello to you, Matt.
Hello, Matt. How are you today?
Not too bad. Rather sweltering in this bright sunny weather we're enjoying in London, but should be good to go once I've turned my fan back on after the podcast. And also joining us is Lindsay Rowntree, COO at ExchangeWire. Hello to you, Lindsay.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Matt. You're both Matt B, and that's going to get complicated, I'm sure, very quickly.
I know. I was delighted to see that. Not only another Matt, but another MB as well. And hopefully that's not too confusing for you, Lindsay. I'm sure you can manage.
I'll work around it. I'm sure I can cope.
That'll be good stuff.
There'll be methods around it. I could be one T, other Matt can be two Ts. That can work nicely.
Very, very, very good point. The other thing, Matt, are you a Matthew?
I'm a Matt, but
you're just a Matt.
I could be a Matthew for this occasion.
Well, because I'm a Matthias, you see. So exactly. So we can always we can go with that distinction if you prefer.
Matthias, good name. Don't hear that very often.
No, indeed. To be fair, no one calls me Matthias apart from, you know, my dear departed grandfather. So I might have the odd flashback if you start calling me Matthias.
Start calling you that.
Well, staying on math, MediaMath, the veteran demand-side platform, which declared bankruptcy in July, has been acquired by Infillion. The tech platform picked up the flailing DSP for $22 million, a steep drop from MediaMath's previous valuations, which at one point climbed to $1 billion. Investment fund Aperium Ventures reportedly advised on the new deal, fueling speculation that Joe Zawodzki, Aperium's owner and the founder and ex-CEO of MediaMath, may be looking to return to the fold at the former company. So, first question to you guys. What does the future hold for the revived MediaMath? Matt, let's start with you.
Oof, this one, Matt, is this is very, very, very challenging for, you know, a now traditional DSP to re-enter the market. I think that obviously there's some real winners. There's been some genuine shake out of the ad tech industry. The Trade Desk, of course, continue to go from strength to strength. Amazon DSP are doing very, very well. We have an exclusive relationship there, which is brilliant. But the platform itself and the adoption across agency and client direct has been very, very strong. And of course, there's other channels that are growing above and beyond open web, like social, for example, as well. The Trade Desk, as far as I can see, they've already picked up a lot of enterprise accounts that MediaMath were working with. The Trade Desk had already won in agency land and are now, you know, battling it out with a DSP. Okay. MediaMath had a great relationship with Havas, but outside of that, in Europe specifically, the Trade Desk really did win in that agency sector, and you know, which we're well beyond that hyper growth stage of open web programmatic now. And yes, there are growth opportunities within connected TV. There's pockets of expansion, sure, but you know, the big year-on-year triple digit growth is not there. That's not the stage that we're at in Europe anymore, and we're seeing that through consolidation. I also think that the macro environment has just changed massively. You know, we're no longer in an environment where there's a lot of cheap money, and it's just, yeah, that's fine so long as it's fueling growth. It's all about profitability now, and some of the figures that I've seen, you know, in terms of the total investment, I understand in MediaMath over time was $600 million. Which is an extraordinary amount of money, and to not see a return on that investment is is absolutely bonkers. But also in today's climate, to get those levels of investment without a very clear path to profitability is just not going to happen. So in this sector, certainly not. There were lots of great people there. We tried to help with. We were recruiting for some roles where MediaMath, with MediaMath offices where they were affected, and we were contacting candidates and so on, and lots of people. There was a groundswell of support across ad tech when it all went down, and that was great because there's some really good people at MediaMath. But the idea of trying to revive this, the phoenix from the flames, I think is crazy. It's crazy.
Lindsay, what are your thoughts on it? Any more optimism there, or sharing Matt's viewpoint?
I think I do share Matt's viewpoint. I think I feel like there's kind of a bit of a kind of hero kind of complex thing of Joe Zawoski kind of trying to get back involved with MediaMath again by kind of backing the sale and helping advise the sale from Infillion, which I just think is kind of both hilarious and strange at the same time. But I completely agree with what Matt said. You know, there was $600 million in funding. There was a $150 million loan from Goldman Sachs they need to pay back after all their staff have been paid. The problem with it having got as far as going to Chapter 11 filing is that all of the customers they had, all the advertisers, the agencies, the ad networks they work with, they all had to jump ship quickly and hurriedly find a new DSP to go and move all their campaigns to. This was very, very stressful for these companies. They had to try and shift loads of campaigns almost overnight, work all over the weekend to try and shift everything over as quick as possible, try and get new terms drawn up with different DSPs if they were only working with one or couldn't move everything over to one. It was a really horrible time. Are they getting moved back to MediaMath after all that happened? Yeah. I very much doubt it. And also, you know, Matt, as you said, the trade desk have taken up a lot of the slack that MediaMath could have let go when they filed. And I think people will realise that the likes of MediaMath, the likes of the other independent DSPs that exist out there will be able to offer more than what was a pure play display, really, DSP with MediaMath. And, you know, we can't take away from how much MediaMath did for the digital advertising industry and certainly the kind of programmatic real-time bidding industry. But I don't see how they can now, at the stage they're at, look to compete with the other DSPs. And maybe they aren't trying to. Maybe they're trying to kind of come back as a really sort of niche DSP operating with a sort of certain size and scale of companies, and they might kind of try and come back and do something completely different. I think they're going to need to, because there's no point in them trying to compete. And they've also, you know, they've got lots of things hanging over their heads. Like, there's still loads of unpaid SSPs that are owed millions and millions of dollars. Their staff need paying. They haven't got the integrations. They haven't got the product offerings that the other DSPs have. And there's a lot of things for them to have to consider. And I just question who would want to work with them in this stage. Unless people are looking for something completely fresh and starting again, then that's going to be the option. And don't want to put all their eggs in the trade desk or the DV360 basket, which there are companies that don't want to do that. And they want to work with other people that aren't kind of the big behemoths. That's where MediaMath could win. But I do struggle to see kind of where their future goes now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting in terms of the filings they've made around the bankruptcy and the subsequent acquisition. They want to be chugging over $1 billion over the next 5 years. And like you both said, I can't necessarily see how they're going to do that with, you know, obviously staff and partners not necessarily going to be anywhere near as on board as they've been in previous years. And you know, a lot of their problems were reportedly stemming from things like their financing, things like their payment turnover. And I can't see their partners being any more lenient in terms of that. But is this a problem that's kind of isolated to MediaMath? And what does its recent trials tell us about the current state of the ad tech industry, if anything at all? Matt?
Yeah, good point. I think just to build prior to answering that question on something that you've both touched on, but Lindsay in particular, it really doesn't make any sense at all to come back as a pure play traditional DSP, and the, you know, you've got a lump of tech and reliable tech sitting there, but all the people that were working on with that tech are a little bit annoyed about the situation. So that so then it becomes, okay, well, what is the potential to integrate that tech in a different way? To your point, Lindsay, about how does it come back as something different and as part of something different? And that's just about the only plausible thing that you could see. And I don't know exactly what that looks like because I'm not technical enough. But are there retail media applications, for example? Mm. Are there different ways in which that tech platform, because exactly as you say, Matt, all of the people have gone. And they're pissed off, excuse me. And the partners, they're in the same boat. So it's tech. It's just tech that's sitting there. And how can you repurpose that? How can you re-envision that and add it to, in it's more of a kind of a trade sale or strategic thing rather than a pure play DSP that just makes no sense at all. To answer your question, this is a very extreme example. Maybe not an extreme example, but it's a very good example of the overarching belt tightening that's been going on, not just in ad tech, but globally for the last, 18 months, perhaps even 2 years. As we have all been feasting on effectively free money, dirt cheap money, and looking at growth, without necessarily clear path to profitability, that has said, and I think it's really harsh to say that MediaMath was a zombie company, but you look at the level of investments. I don't know what profitability was like at MediaMath, but you look at the level of investment, and you there's no way that it can be a return on that investment. I don't know what the day-to-day profitability was like. I do think it's a bit harsh to call them a zombie company, but we're not in that environment anymore. And that's applicable to ad tech. It's applicable to healthcare, to startups and earlier stage ventures, across the board, because money is not as cheap and decisions are being made much more carefully and more studiously. So it's a very good example of a much broader global trend for sure.
I totally agree with Matt, and I think that gone are the days where Matt mentioned that the belt tightening was happening, and that I think is a really really important point. And MediaMath, I don't want to kind of to start kind of being disparaging about their business model or anything, or kind of like, I don't know intricately how they worked, but for example, they were very much maybe kind of one of the last sort of the showier companies that they had their HQ was in like One World Trade Center on like the 50th floor. This is an amazing office. But they had that all the while they had financial issues, and it's kind of how much are you trying to show, what you're trying to show to the world versus how are things actually going inside, and are you using that money to get spunky? Obviously, you're using that money to diversify and try and find new ways of growing your business and find new customers. And there's sort of that side of it. But there's also the kind of and Matt alluded to it as well, the growth at all costs. We are, I think, ad tech certainly is moving out of that phase now, and we're trying to be more responsible. And we have grown up. We're no longer like moody teenagers. We're now adults that have a financial and fiduciary responsibility to the industry, to our clients, to our partners, everything else. And I think that is what's going to play out ultimately in ad tech, is people looking, okay, how can I be more responsible? How can I not kind of be frivolous with the money that I'm getting in, not kind of getting in, $150 million loans, For the hell of it. I'm sure it wasn't for the hell of it. They had obviously actual reasons for using it, but I think that everyone is starting to be much more conscious of where money's going and what's coming back in its place. And profitability has obviously always been important, but now it's even more important, and those margins are becoming very, very important as everything has become so much more expensive for everybody. So I think that as Matt said, this is an extreme example, but maybe not as extreme as it should be, because there are other companies that could fall foul of this as well. And often when one comes out the woodwork, you kind of see a couple more come out the woodwork as well. I hope that doesn't, that's not the case for something, for a company, you know, as big and pronounced as MediaMath. But I think that we need to be careful and be aware of what is happening in the industry.
Yeah, and this is, you know, it's a very good example, and I haven't plotted this on a chart, but I'll bet this is very typical of an industry life cycle and a maturity curve.
Mm.
Because, and I bet you could apply, you could look at this, for automotive back at, in 1901, tracking it through to now, and the way in which that industry has developed with lots of entrants and lots of, and all of the, and then it flattening out and plateauing and reducing in terms of the number of players and all of that stuff. I bet you can plot that sort of thing ongoing for all sorts of different industries, and we're at that stage, and that's fine. Exactly as you put it very nicely, Lindsay. We're not moody teenagers anymore, and that we've got to grow up a little bit, and that means being more responsible with profit. But you've got a double whammy of big macroeconomic factors as well that are driving that belt tightening too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also we've got to, as well as kind of, wider changes happening to every industry, you've got to remember we're in a rapidly cycling digital industry. Obviously, think of all the various factors we've got going on at the moment in terms of cookie deprecation, the consolidation of the supply path. We've got to remember it's still a really exciting industry, but there are going to be casualties if you can't adapt appropriately. But
100%.
Moving us on, as we've moved on from being moody teenagers into our adult life phase, to the second story of the week. The time US adults spend on TikTok is estimated to have hit around 4.43 billion minutes per day. The figure reported by Business Insider exceeds the time spent on rival platform Instagram, which is believed to sit at 3.91 billion daily minutes, despite the Meta-owned company's larger adult user base. Despite taking the lead in terms of time spent, TikTok still trails when it comes to ad revenue, with Instagram's anticipated ad revenue per adult user per hour forecast to exceed TikTok's by sixfold in 2023. However, the ByteDance-owned app could narrow this gap if it continues to acquire more users and more of their time. So my first question to you, Lindsay, is as the battle for attention heats up, will TikTok be able to convert that time spent into ad revenue?
It's an interesting question and one which I think will elicit multiple responses. There's, we were chatting about this in the office, and one of our commercial guys said, well, isn't TikTok just all teenagers, all kids? And it's like, well, actually, I guess the perception of it is that most people on TikTok, he actually referred to as 10-year-olds, are like, between sort of 10 and 19 years old. And actually, that what advertiser is going after that target market, that we're not just going after, is legally allowed to go after that target market on TikTok, but there actually aren't many. And I think that I was trying to find stats of what TikTok's user base looks like, and something like 22% of users are between 10 and 19 years old, which is a fairly significant portion. That does also mean that another 75-odd% are over 19 years old, and probably kind of the right target market for many of these people. I think that there's a few things to think about. Firstly, you mentioned, was it 4.43 billion and 3.19 billion daily minutes? For perspective, YouTube is 9 billion daily minutes. So they've still got quite a way to go. But of course, YouTube is mostly long form content, so it does make sense. And I think that how long are we going to compare TikTok and Instagram as like-for-like social media platforms, because they are just so very, very different. They're so incomparable. I know that Instagram is kind of trying to go more video-focused with the likes of Reels and Stories, but TikTok is just a purely video format. And because of that, from an advertiser perspective, you can't just take one ad format and then just kind of apply it to all your social media platforms. You have to kind of have a completely different strategy for a completely different team, arguably, to be able to effectively advertise on TikTok. And also, TikTok is much more upper funnel. They're trying to be lower funnel. They've obviously launched their shopper products, which they're doing, I think are growing, but it's still very nascent. There's a long way to go. The thing you have to say about Meta, whatever people think of Meta, whatever people think of advertising on Facebook or Instagram, they provide very good data. and they have a really, really good account support for SMEs. So they're, most of their revenue comes from these long tail companies rather than the big, you know, P&Gs and Unilevers and et cetera of the world. And they service them really well. And I think TikTok will need to make sure that they do the same thing for their for SMEs, because that's ultimately who the majority of the revenue is going to probably come from. But I think TikTok are going great guns. Maybe they haven't got the ad tech part of it locked down yet in terms of what they've built in the back end versus what Instagram have, and being able to apply it so well to the different types of ad formats. You know, I refer back often to the time we had TikTok on the podcast talking about some of the ads that the clients that work with them and some of the ads they've done. And they are fascinating, and it's, you can be so creative with it. And I really enjoyed that as an uncreative person. I really enjoyed hearing about it. I find it fascinating the way that companies approach it. But if you only assume that TikTok is a top of funnel social media platform, you're not going to get performance from it. You're not going to actually be able to track sales properly from it. You're going to steer clear from it, and you're going to go to the places you know and trust, which are normally like Instagram, where you get the data that you want, the performance marketing data that you want. But in a world where brand and performance are blurring massively, and you know, should we even be really referring to things as brand and performance anymore? Is it not all one and the same? I think people will start moving towards TikTok once they work out exactly how to get the most out of it. TikTok, you know, as they grow, their shopper platform will become huge. It's going to grow hugely. There's no question of it at all. And they'll just need to make sure that they are servicing all size clients effectively to get the most out of that, and providing the right data. I think people just need help to know what to do with TikTok. Once they've worked that out, it will go great guns, I'm sure of it.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's a great question. And TikTok has been, you know, sucking the attention out of the room for a long time. But they've been playing catch up with Meta in terms of the bells and whistles and the features and the benefits for advertisers and agencies. And there's always been a gap between what Meta have been able to do because of the data assets that they've got. You need an email address to log into the platform. There's lots of maids pre-Apple changes. There's some fundamental differences in terms of the data structure, which facilitate all sorts of cool stuff for advertisers on Meta platforms that TikTok don't have the benefit of, because you don't need to register, you don't need to log in, there's some sort of fundamental points there. But ever since, I don't know him personally, but there's a guy called Blake Chandley. He arrived at TikTok about 5 years ago from Facebook, where he had spent a long time. And ever since then, they've been building and replicating a pretty formidable ad tech platform. That's what they've been trying to do, pull together. They've got a great partnership team. There's a couple, Chen Lin, I've worked with quite a lot, and Melissa Yang. They've been, you know, they've had the attention of audience for years now, but it's all about how you make that accessible to advertisers and how you make advertisers comfortable with the platform as well. And that comes into, well, how, you know, how old are the users and all of this sort of thing as well. Many years ago now, when I was still at Oracle, we sold them Moat Analytics, and that provided them with basic verification, hygiene measures, but also differentiation around ad formats and engagement metrics as well. And for TikTok, it was a really valuable partnership because it gave them that verification and that seal of approval from a brand like Oracle, like Moat Analytics, and it also allowed them to differentiate in terms of the type of advertising that they were providing, and demonstrate how their formats and their placements and their engagement was different and better than other platforms. And that was just one of many, many different things in terms of ad tech functionality that they were implementing across that Blake Chandler and his team were implementing globally across TikTok, and that continues. We have just finished our data integration with Zeotap and TikTok. I'm very pleased to make Zeotap data audiences available across TikTok now. That's, we've just launched that. And this is part of the same process. It's how do you make it consistent? How do you make advertisers and moreover their media buying agencies, how do you give them comparable tactics? How do you give them the same measurable outcomes? How do you give them a consistent strategy that they can deliver across open web programmatic, across Facebook, across Instagram, across TikTok? A CMO needs to be able to consolidate and to understand what's happening across a very diverse landscape. So having that consistency and to be able to boil things down in a consistent manner is hugely valuable for an advertiser and of course their agency who's trying to activate all this stuff. So TikTok they've been playing catch up with 20 years of Facebook advertising pedigree. You know, Facebook has been a machine. And exactly as you say, Lindsay, very good at that bottom of the funnel conversion, very good at tracking it and proving the value that they create for sure. But actually TikTok have been winning that attention and engagement war. And you're seeing that with the stats. But they're continuing to put out a suite of best-in-class advertiser services, and we're delighted to be part of that. That means that they're going to continue to win those budgets too. But Facebook and Meta, they continue to be this conversion machine, attributable conversion machine, and that's not going to stop. And also Facebook, they're no longer mucking around in the metaverse and spending $1 billion a month on that total nonsense.
Finally.
Exactly. And, you know, someone snuck up behind Zuckerberg and gave him a quick blow to the back of the head and brought him to his senses. And of course that means that, they're very much back in the game, from a product and advertising, focused, strategy, and so they're. I think we'll see these two trading blows. The final point, Lindsay, to pick up on one that you made, and this has happened with Facebook already. You know, they pick up an audience, and then that audience grows with them and matures with them.
Yeah, good point.
And you see that with other sectors as well. VW Golf is always one for me, because I remember VW Golf from when I was a kid, and you know, the original hot hatch, and it was brilliant. But then, you know, they kind of followed me as I grew, and they got older and more mature as a car, and a little bit more, you know, but I think you see that with the social platforms. And you've definitely seen that with Facebook. So it'd be very interesting to see that evolution. In terms of that, because they are younger, sure, but are they going to stick with TikTok, and are they going to grow up and then start buying a whole lot of stuff, or will they dissipate off to the next great thing, which I don't know what it is, but I hope that I invent it.
Yeah, I hope I invent it before you, so that I can then get the riches.
Happy to partner.
Lindsay, okay, fine. I can work something out there. That's okay. I think that you make a point about the platforms growing with you, because I think of Facebook as being for like 50 plus year olds, Instagram for like 30 plus year olds, and TikTok for like 10 plus year olds. And actually, whether that's accurate or not, I don't know, because I don't really use any of them. But I'm most active on Instagram, in that I actually look at Instagram every now and then.
Stopped using Instagram because I was getting sucked into the reels. I found myself just being, you know, funny cat videos, which, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, I spent 45 minutes. Like, whoa, what the hell happened there? And
it's a vortex.
You go into these wormholes of amusing cat videos, and I got rid of Instagram completely from my phone. So I thought, this is not what life is about, surely. So I don't use any of them anymore at all.
I mean, that's the ultimate dream, I think. I got rid of my Facebook account years ago, but obviously I have a general Meta account. I use WhatsApp and I use Instagram. Twitter, or X, sorry, I use it to see why there's traffic on the motorway normally. Nothing
Do
else,
you?
No other
okay.
reason.
Nothing else. No.
And then
of the hatred, none of the division.
No, well, only because everyone's still using it to for public service announcements that's happening in my local areas. That's the only reason I'm still on it. But and then TikTok, I have it on my phone and I opened it earlier for the purpose of, you know, doing a bit of research for this. And I turned it on and it was really loud and I screamed, oh no, how do I turn this thing off? It's too loud. So I don't know how it works. There was some kind of person talking about how to walk his dog and I couldn't shut the damn thing up.
Did they serve you any ants though? Did you see any ants?
I wasn't on it long enough. I was trying to find out about the creator tools. I was going into the back end, if you like, to look at the creator tools and look at the shopping platform.
I didn't actually
look at any actual TikTok. So I tried to get rid of it quickly by swiping in every direction, try and shut it up, but I couldn't do it. So it wasn't very successful.
Fine. Well, look, next time you go on there, we'll overlay some high quality, distinguished Zeotap data, and then you'll be targeted with something that you really want. You go, oh my God, this platform's amazing.
Yeah, that's the hope. I'll
look this up.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Beautiful.
I'll get back into it again. But I think one thing that I'm, you know, I mentioned earlier, like this whole, you know, how can we compare TikTok and Instagram when they, you know, they're quite different in terms of user profile, quite different in terms of how people interact with them and the engagement and the eyeballs. I mean, Matt, you might have some insight into this, but kind of where the budget's coming from. Like, if I'm going to be investing in TikTok, is it brand new budget? Is it coming from my Instagram budget? And if it is, like, you know, where my Instagram budget is probably kind of, you know, I've got really strict KPIs against it, like, you know, revenue per user or ROI or sort of something outcomes based. How can I then put that into TikTok where I might not have that same level of attribution or attributable conversions? Can't say that word. Attributable. There we go. Attributable. That's the word. That's the way you're supposed to say it.
Yeah, you got it. You nailed it.
Yeah, eventually. Wow. Long day. But also then, you know, I mentioned YouTube earlier as well. TikTok versus YouTube, you know, is video, a very different type of video, but you know, and there's people talking about TikTok maybe kind of coming out of TV budget because the way people are watching it and the way people are engaging with it. Like, what is TikTok and where does the, if you're an advertiser, where's the budget coming from?
Yeah, it was really interesting because we were talking to one of the big agencies just earlier on this week, and the brief was actually, it was for a big travel company who wanted to recruit software engineers. It was a very, very, very niche brief.
Niche.
The agency, yeah, it really was. And the agency had completely flipped it on its head and said, well, the problem is actually that you don't, people don't know that you are a big software engineering job provider. So you need to create awareness. Therefore, we are recommending Facebook to start things off and then LinkedIn for lower down the funnel. So they were using, the brief from the travel company was, right, we want to recruit software engineers that are specialists in Python and da-da-da-da. It was unbelievably niche. And they just flipped it around completely and saying, well, no, we'd use Facebook for awareness because it's got the reach, it's got the scale, it's now got a more mature audience, and also it's very cost effective as well. And then actually we go further down the funnel into LinkedIn, which was probably inverse from what I would have thought. Well, actually, I wouldn't have thought Facebook was relevant at all. I would have thought that it's, you know, LinkedIn would make a whole load of sense there. So, but it was a good example of where a leading media agency was seeing the application of Facebook, which was actually about awareness and reach, a traditional TV kind of space. And I agree with you. I don't know where TikTok is being placed in that media plan from a planning perspective. I don't know what it's. Facebook is very, very good at these big broad demographic groups, and also very good at real pure performance, the long tail performance stuff. I agree with you. I'm not quite sure where TikTok sits within that.
Interesting. And I think it's also interesting that people don't know how to, obviously, where Meta's trying to be adaptive by putting Reels in and YouTube similarly with Shorts. Executives don't know how that plays out internally, because obviously this Business Insider article we've been referencing, that references the fact that, you know, like I said, people at Meta don't necessarily know how Reels complements it, and is it cannibalizing that ad revenue from Instagram? And similarly, YouTube executives, they're not sure how Shorts will, is it actually benefiting ad revenue for YouTube as a whole? And, you know, will it pull budget out that TV spend? So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how it all pans out. And obviously, I'm also very interested to see how the new Matt and Lindsay social media platform will take off going forward.
It'll be big.
It's going to be huge. We're in beta at the moment, Matt. We need more Matts. Very good. There's another MB as well. We want more than 60% of users to be called Matt. So if you sign up, we'll hit that metric.
Excellent. I hope there's user discounts for us MBs around the world.
A very generous discount.
Excellent. Yeah. Glad to hear. We'll move things on to the third news story of the week. MPs have expressed concern that the UK could fail in its ambition to become a pioneer in regulating artificial intelligence if new legislation is not introduced soon. Members of the Commons Technology Committee have warned that the UK could end up trailing the EU unless the government ensures that AI legislation is included in the King's Speech, which will take place on 7th of November. A government spokesperson pointed to its £100 million investment in an AI task force and the UK's plans to host an international AI summit in November as evidence of Rishi Sunak's commitment to the safe development of AI. However, they remain tight-lipped over whether the government plans to impose any new legislation in the coming months. Should the UK government and those of other countries be taking a stricter legal approach to AI? Matt, let's start with you.
No. I mean... and maybe I'm misunderstanding the question here, but the UK could fail in its ambition to become a pioneer in regulating artificial intelligence. Do we want to be a pioneer in the regulation of AI?
I'm with you.
Or simply AI here? This is... And overall, and I'd love your opinion on this, guys, because I'm really on the fence. Are the machines, are they coming? Are they going to wipe us out? Is this going to happen in the next 10 years? Or, you know, are the commentators who are pushing that narrative, are they too vested? Is it the awareness that it creates? Is that very helpful to what they're doing? Do they believe their own hype? Too much, or are the machines really going to wipe us out? I don't think they are. I think there's a lot of sensationalizing going on here. I also think there's a lot of catastrophizing going on, and I think we're very good at that. There's been a few recent demonstrations of that. Surely the massive, massive, massive benefits of AI and human interaction and guidance of AI are going to create so much more efficiency, so much more productivity, so many more jobs, so many more companies, so much more wealth. We've got to be a pioneer in that, and we've got the brains, we've got the university infrastructure, and we've got the thought leadership, I think, to genuinely be a player in this space. And I think the government's making the right moves. And we should be going full speed ahead here. The bad actors, or the potential bad actors, you know, North Korea, are they going slow on AI? It seems unlikely to me. They're not slowing down. We need to legislate to develop safely. Yes, of course. But I'm less concerned about the UK and other, I would hope, reputable actors are developing things in the right ways. I was thinking about a comparison, an analogy here. It's a little bit like drugs testing, isn't it? You know, you can come up with drugs tests in sports, and you can only test for what is already known. And the legislation here, I think, is equally tricky, because people are going to be developing stuff, and how can the legislation and the regulation genuinely keep pace with it? I've really liked some of the voluntary commitment stuff that some big players have been making in this space, which obviously leans more towards self-regulation as opposed to formalizing legislation and regulation from the top down, from Parliament down. And the other thing here, this is just such a big opportunity for humankind, and it's almost kind of whatever about advertising use cases. I mean, there's some brilliant ones out there. There's Chalice AI there, and Cybiz. They're optimizing programmatic campaigning according to data inputs from lifetime value, from viewability, from engagement, from conversion metrics. Really smart machine learning to help optimize programmatic buys. We're using machine learning to help build validated demographic segments and potentially audience recommendations in the future. There's all sorts of cool stuff that we can do using machine learning AI specifically within ad tech. But I really do think that this is so much bigger than that. The healthcare applications, for example, it are just phenomenal. And the way in which AI can learn and identify lung cancers, for example, from scans and with much more accuracy, obviously much, much quicker. This is just humankind changing stuff and applications here, and we've got to find ways to support it and to help it grow in the most productive sectors. So the idea of sort of leading the way in regulation, I don't think is the right context.
Lindsay, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Matt. I don't really get it. I don't know what they're going for here. Like these members of the CTC that have warned that the UK can end up trailing behind the EU just sound like a bunch of hardcore Brexiteers that see everything that we do as a competition with what the EU does. And I don't think that's really particularly helpful. And they've referenced the fact that, much like we've had to do with GDPR, like UK data laws now have to mirror GDPR. Well, they didn't. That's only because when GDPR was first announced, we were still part of the EU. And it is logical for us to then replicate what GDPR does because of the fact that, we're in the same region and we're trying to achieve the same goals. So I'd imagine most Western countries, most countries in this region, certainly, would probably have similar goals when it comes to the application of AI in their countries and wanting to harness them and restrict them where they are illegal or nefarious or whatever else. There's no reason why we can't all kind of come up with a collective regulation that applies to that. We haven't got to be the trailblazers in the regulation of AI. And I completely agree that AI regulation is going to be very important because there are going to be bad actors out there. But I think that as Matt said, and some of the examples that Matt highlighted is kind of where AI can change humankind. We don't, and the fact that AI is moving and the technology around it is moving so quickly, regulation is obviously correctly so very inflexible. Even just the fact that it's written in the article, right? Unless the AI legislation is included in the King's speech on November the 7th, it might be that we can't get any regulation passed until 2025. That shows you how inflexible it is, that if we don't do it now, we can't do it another 2 years. Maybe we're better off waiting for another 2 years and when things are more bedded in and we have a better idea. And in the meantime, as Rishi Sunak, our Prime Minister says, we can actually do a lot of things in restricting the problems with AI without there needing to be kind of hardcore regulation. That, I think, needs to be the focus and actually focus more on what we can do with AI rather than trying to block what we shouldn't do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd much rather a government actively collaborate with other governments rather than wringing their hands as to say, why isn't our legislation the first or the best? It's a piece of legislation that affects a global technology sector. It shouldn't be seen as a nationalistic win.
Yeah, well said. And the GDPR example is a really straightforward one as well, because no one wants a different set of regulations to conform to, and everyone's got to go down to the lowest common denominator in a globally connected world anyway. The idea that it's sort of competitive with Europe, or no, it's all wrong. Let's create a sensible framework that allows people to develop cool things. The whole ChatGPT thing is maybe not quite a red herring, but the value is not through pointing these things at just vast data sets that are completely unstructured and uncontrolled data sets, but the value comes from humans guiding the AI to look at, for example, very specific data sets and to do some quite specific things, but to do them completely objectively, although bias is always is quite a big thing. I'm much more informed, people tell me, but it's about guiding the AI to look at a particular data set to reach a certain set of conclusions in unbelievable timeframes. And there's so much opportunity here to bog it down with red tape or drag it into some sort of, Brexiteer, absolute nonsense. Let's find some real positive ways forward here.
Absolutely. And I think that's a nice positive note to leave the news story section of the podcast behind and focus a bit more on you, Matt, and what you're up to at Zeotap. So yeah, what's going on at Zeotap? Obviously you touched on the TikTok partnership earlier.
Yeah, TikTok is really exciting for us. They are growing a little bit and they are sucking the attention out of the room, as we talked about earlier on. That's great. What we want to do is, an advertiser or an agency will have an audience strategy. British Airways, PepsiCo, Mercedes, different models, but they'll have a clear idea profile of their audience. And our point is really quite simple. We would like to help define and implement that audience strategy, whether the media buying is taking place across open web programmatic, whatever DSP you're using, whatever SSP you're using, or indeed whatever social platform you're using as well. So you have that consistency of audience strategy, of data-driven strategy in line with your chosen personas, your defined personas, and you can apply that to TikTok or Facebook or Trade Desk. And having that consistent approach is very helpful for advertisers and their media buying agencies. At the same time, of course, TikTok have some wonderful native options and opportunities on their platform, and advertisers, I'm sure, will make good use of those as well. The other big things we're super focused on Europe, and it looks now like Google might actually mean it next year when it comes to cookie deprecation. I may have to eat my hat. I think I did at one point say, I'll eat my hat if Google actually switch off these third-party cookies. And I might have to do that next year. So let's see. But you heard it here first. Lindsay, maybe I could come back and eat a hat on a podcast.
I think we need to make sure we film it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Pick a good hat as well. It needs to be a real good hat.
How about you choose the hat?
Done.
The hat.
Okay, turns up with a massive top hat about.
Yeah, exactly. Great. A stovepipe, a huge stovepipe hat. That'd be a long and boring podcast. But anyway, they do look like they mean it now. And And you know, we as a data-driven business, we have focused on persistent identifiers for really quite some time. And we have these brilliant relationships with mobile telcos across Europe, and some really big mobile telcos. They give us mobile advertising IDs, and we have hashed email addresses as well. We have our own universal ID, which is ID Plus. That is interoperable with lots of other universal IDs. And that is the way in which we have been syncing data and activating data with downstream platforms. And we'll continue to do so. But cookies, cookie-based behavioral data in particular, that has continued to be a very useful perspective on what users, what people are doing. And agencies and platforms, they're still trading against mobile advertising IDs and cookie IDs. At the same time, we've got, and I think it's a bit like oil. You know, we're just going to use every single last drop on the planet, and we'll burn it all. And I imagine that third party cookie use is a little bit the same. At the same time, of course, we're future-proofing everything that we do with persistent identifiers, with contextual extension, with clean room applications, with IP addresses, actually. There's a lot that you can do there right now, and more that we believe can be done in the future. So we're laying some groundwork for 2024 right now to ensure that everything is future-proof. But overall, for me, it's a great pleasure to be back involved with lots of stuff in Europe, having been focused on Asia and LATAM for Oracle. It's great to be back in Europe with ZioTap.
And it's an absolute pleasure to have you back in the industry, especially with, you know, hat eating antics and social media platform creation. There's going to be a lot of interesting things to come from you in the next 2 years.
I'm concerned about what I've committed to here.
It's all recorded. We've all got three separate audio streams recording this. So
I know. Oh well. let's see what Google do.
Someone's going to be writing a lot of letters to Google to.
Definitely.
Yeah. We'll see.
Well, that just about brings us out of time. But Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast and to hear your views and insights.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks so much, Matt and Lindsay. Always a pleasure.
And Lindsay, thank you ever so much for joining us as well.
Thank you. Really good conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
And thank you all ever so much for listening. That was this week's MadTech Podcast.